This is Medicine with Ion, Thursdays, June 25th, 9:36 a.m. Hawaii time. It's reading number 63. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hello there, and how are you this fine day?
Very great. Thank you very much. Great, great, wonderful, blissful, resistanceless knowing that's coming into your knowing, which is a delightful experience and a little task of co-creating at its best.
Very good. And we left off, I thought it was another disease or condition or disconnection that we were dealing with, but we've gone into the G's. And I mean, the first one is gas. It's really not a disease. If you want to tackle it, fine. If not, we'll go on to gut.
Actually, no, it would be an F. It would be flatulence.
You are too brilliant. Okay, it is an F. You very good.
It is. The only issue is that it's better out than in, but sometimes the body can create a gastrointestinal still, which will produce making more gas, what makes you kind of gassy.
Yeah.
That's why folks kind of stay away from some things or other things, but there's the whole process is the little gulps of air that you swallow. Are the air that's in your system, which naturally works its way through. But then if you have something fermenting, many times people have different foods cause it. Cucumbers are very prone for it, or beans, dry beans, or baked beans. A good level of protein can also send you into a gassy state as it becomes like a still. And it's very easily corrected just with the balance of the acidic. You would do a chow chow or a relish with those kind of foods, and that would help temper and balance that, so it wouldn't make you quite so flatulent.
Now, I think of gas in my world of yeast overgrowth as being related to yeast being fed undigested carbs or sugars. Is that something that you see as well?
It can. Anything like a still, a still works off yeast.
Yes.
And then the sugars or those complex carbohydrates that feed it then can create the still effect of those gases. They've got to go somewhere.
Okay, I mean, that's enough on that. Unless you,
okay.
I don't know that there's... The disconnection in that is that people just don't want to be around you.
Well, no, the disconnection with that is when you get crossways of it and are embarrassed by it. So what you need to know about gas is it's better out than in.
Yes,
when
yeah.
When you withhold it or back that up, that can cause all kinds of issues. You know, it's kind of natural. Who doesn't go to the bathroom? So it's logical.
So some people are trying to not pass gas for fear of being embarrassed, then they're
going
to...
Well, you're taught that it's bad manners. Well, if you're very, very gassy, you just excuse yourself and let it be.
Okay.
Or when you get hard of hearing, you can't hear it anyway, so it's okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's why older people seem to have more gas. No, they just...
They don't hear it.
Yeah. Okay, I think we alluded to gout yesterday, but
We did with the uric acid and that buildup of that acid in the muscles. And that disconnection is circulatory. Like you called it a rich man's disease. Because a lot of times it comes, not necessarily, but typically it was from those in a sedentary position. And then diving into those livers and foie gras and rich foods, which have a lot of uric acid, and that can cause a buildup. And when the blood can't move it, it almost crystallizes. And they say it is more contrasting, to say the least.
Okay.
And the rule is you shouldn't eat any processed oils. And we say it's just the opposite of that.
Ah.
You've got to have like an artichoke, which is probably one of the worst things they say you can do, which is the best thing, processed in oil.
Ah.
Sweeten yourself up. Grease yourself up. It makes that more easy to flow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or anything you can do that'll bring relief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they say it is very debilitating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And can get kind of almost septic if you let it go.
Right, right. And then the circulatory disconnection. Tell me more what you mean about that.
You have abundance, which there's not a problem with. But if you have a problem with that abundance, sometimes it'll land, and that abundance will stick to you, and that abundance of uric acid can be painful because you get out of balance with it.
Mm-hmm.
Why they call it the rich man's disease.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Good. Okay, if there's nothing more than that, we'll move to gum disease.
Specifically, are you talking about the all of them? I mean, there's pyorrhea, there's gingivitis, there's just pick something.
Right.
You're talking about the detaching of the gum from the teeth and the root?
Let's start with gingivitis.
Okay. Well, you could spend a week right there. But let's just do the generalized gum disease.
Okay, sure.
The decrease of flow of blood in the gum area from the bone and the root of the teeth. Because you really don't need gums. You just need gums to hold your teeth in place.
Uh-huh, right.
And that circulation and the saliva that's produced keeps that washed out nicely. But if you have, you can have root planing, you can have all different kinds of aspects. And all these different things lead to the gingivitis, the periodontal disease, the on and on and on and on and on. And the only reason that's a problem is because, by and large, it ends up in loss of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Or sensitivity to hot or to cold.
Mm-hmm.
All those different levels or degree of what you call decay. It doesn't have to be in your experience at all, unless you're hung up on Snicker bars and then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. But if that's not a problem, then you can balance and enjoy that. Or the same thing with sugary things can be an issue. Nothing wrong with that. But like, let's say you're a Coca-holic. We don't mean cocaine. We mean like Coca-Cola or fizzy, bubbly, sugary drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Have them, enjoy them, but don't sip them. Don't take a sip all day long.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're constantly changing the flora and fauna of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what can then feed that bacteria side or even viral side. Because that's where you can get the what you call whore mouth or the herpes and all those other kind of things the same way, caught from that same process, you see. Which would be a gum disease.
Right.
You see.
Right.
And canker sores would be the same way. Typically, if you're having problems in the mouth, inside the mouth, or in the gums, that's an obvious symptom of the larger cause. Because you see it's from stem to stern. It's attached. Stem to stern.
Yeah, got it.
Your mouth all the way through is attached. And that attachment can sometimes give you a heads up that something's out of balance somewhere else if it shows up in the gums or in the mouth or in that creating of saliva. Because if you get to where you lose your saliva glands, you're pretty much done anyway.
Uh-huh.
See, that's the beginning flow of the whole circulatory process of your mucus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, we're sticking through them today. Is that enough or you want more?
Well, I need to clarify because you did click along there. So you're saying that the gums, you don't need the gums. They're just hold things in place.
Well,
but
Now, you don't need the gums. But what the gums do is that is the meat that is your indicator that something is going on. If you have good, irrigated, healthy gums that are tight to the teeth, they're healthy, and when you floss, if you floss, that's not a prerequisite, you can, but you certainly don't have to, and you don't have bleeding, easy bleeding in the teeth and that kind of stuff. That's just a way to let you know, just like looking at your skin, that you're balanced and in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
So any disconnect would just be one to let you know something's a little out of whack.
Okay.
So it's more of a indicator rather than a disease inhibitor.
Right.
Inducer.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay, that makes sense. That's very nice. As is most symptoms of dis-ease is a way of letting you know that something's out of balance.
Sure.
So why did we as a people get into suppressing symptoms instead of recognizing them for what they are?
Because anything that's pain-related becomes an abject or object of your full undivided attention.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, the problem gets more attention than the disease. Well, no, wait.
Uh-huh.
To be pain-free is the goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So whatever has to happen that, you know, you have zero pain, zero contrast in your life, that's the path to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that becomes the fastest path to your joy, then you can have a bad day, and the next thing you know, you're on lithium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If that's the case, and so good. If that's what works, then wonderful. But the issue, just like we talked about fevers, if folks are so just against fevers when they're actually a very healthy way of the body naturally eating up the things that are nasty to kill them back to keep a natural balance, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start giving your attention to all the thing that is any issue, for example, you can not have a toothache and your tooth could be breaking, rotting out, and you can very obviously see it. But because there's no pain involved, you don't find it encouraging to go to see your dentist immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, if there can be a perfectly healthy tooth and you drink something cold and you are sensitive to it, you're immediately making an appointment to rush to the ER to have it doctored and immediate.
Right.
You see, it's the focus of the symptom which gives it more attention, which can bring it a larger thing. You gotta have a reason to hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
yes,
to
yes.
See it as a direction of, well, when I do yoga this way and it pulls my hip out of joint, maybe I don't have to do my yoga that way.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So you focus on that process rather than, oh, I do yoga and it gives me this euphoric or blissful experience, but it pulls my hip out. So therefore, I'll go have a hip replacement and go through that whole process. Then I'll be able to do the yoga that I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, when we say it that way, you go, well, that's the silliest thing you've ever heard in your life, and yet that's what happened.
Right.
You see?
Okay.
Oh, we had a new phrase yesterday that was very wonderful. It would be like committing suicide because you're afraid of dying.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Gum disease. Okay, is there any more of a disconnection to talk about with gum disease?
When you have a pulling away, sometimes it shows as gingivitis and the plaque buildup and the subterranean decay that can fit the gums have a way, if they're pulled back, and draw those bacteria to hide them.
Mm-hmm.
The hidden plaque buildup.
Mm-hmm.
Where the toothbrush can't reach, that's where the problem comes.
So what is a person pulling away from?
Well, they have something to hide, so the gums open up the place for it, makes a pocket. You've heard of pockets.
Mm-hmm, right.
It makes the pocket for those things, those hidden things, to hide, harbor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's when that's the case, that's typically the contrast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you give me an example just to make this flow better?
Oh, sure. Let's use Bob. We love Bob. Bob will be fine. Let's say Bob is a latent. He has problems with Snicker bars, so he has to find a way. so he can enjoy them. And if that were the case, and he felt so compelled that his addiction, or if that's an addiction, and that's just tongue-in-cheek, but it's just so much fun to play with Bob because we love him so. Mm-hmm. If he was hiding it from you and then all of a sudden started losing teeth, you try to get to the bottom of it, well, that would be the way it would hide from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Because it breaks his rule that Snicker bars aren't good. But if he could just be, well, hell yes, I eat Snicker bars 3 times a day, every day, and they while I'm alive, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the gums would say, oh, this is a sustenance to life. Okay, tighten up, boys, we're good to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Alrighty. And then we go on to hay fever. Now, we may have done a bit of that under allergies.
We kind of have, but hay fever, everyone is allergic to hay. Okay, you understand that in the cusp, that stages of hay as it dries. If you're handling hay, the dryness of the cud of the hay is very systemically irritating to the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And the MSM, which is not bad for you, it's the white stuff on the grass.
MSM. I don't know what that is.
It's one of your cockeyed supplements that you witch doctors peddle all over the time as a homeopathic remedy for everything.
Right. So MSM is on the grass?
It's the white powdery stuff on the grass.
Methyl sulfonamethane?
Mm-hmm.
No.
When dogs have an upset stomach and they go out and they eat grass, that's what they're getting.
Ah.
And so the white stuff, which is the coating on the grass, is very natural, healthy, and wonderful.
Yeah.
But in a hay fever standpoint, the pollination and cross-pollination, especially if you have clover in the hay, brings on a whole nother, it's a bacteria that causes clover to actually sprout and be prolific, which puts nitrogen back in the soil. That imbalance of that clover can set off in the sinus a tremendous sinusitis attack. Because there's the clover part of the hay fever, or that pollination, or that tiny pollen that's created, sets off a whole, it can go through the nose and get through. Now, the great big white, yellow, green, whatever color it is, pine stuff, see, those are too big. You don't have any problem with those. Sometimes elm trees have a very, very, very fine pollen which can set off hay fever. And also in the fall of the year, the goldenrod, that green, bushy bush that's on the side of the road, and golden seal blooms in the frost. Or from fall into the frost time of wherever your frost barrier is at the time of year, and set off that hay, sneezing, itchy eyes, runny nose, sinus is just pouring, but you have no other cold or flu symptoms.
All right. Now you say everybody's allergic to hay.
Yes.
Just because it's a natural irritant that's small enough to get in through your orifices.
Yes. And if you have any sensitivity at all, then it is activated in your creation. If it's not, then you don't have that trouble. Oh, you may have, you know, you'll find yourself playing in hay. You'll find yourself a little tired or a little, you know, just a little lethargic that doesn't have to send your nose running and reading.
Okay, so you're saying everyone is allergic, but then you don't express it unless you have a disconnection.
Correct.
Yeah.
Or a sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done a lot of that now. Sensitivity doesn't mean you have a disconnection.
Oh, what does it mean?
Well, sensitivity just means that, just like some people are more sensitive to non-physical than others.
Mm-hmm.
You see, people can both dead people can bump into you, and if you're not sensitive to it, you don't notice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are sensitive, then that can put you in the psych ward if you're not real careful how you express it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a problem until it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. A lot of times people can be exposed to a tremendous amount of it, and then all of a sudden, hey, it doesn't bother them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They have lots of allergy shots. Just go roll them around in the pasture, in the hay.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get so much of it that they have a tolerance that's built up, and there's no the sensitivity is declined because it becomes part of the flora and fauna of the world, which becomes part of your world, which then becomes a balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason some people can take a couple hundred Xanax and it just make them feel really good, and somebody else should give them 50 and they're stone cold dead. You see,
yeah.
a tolerance or sensitivity degree.
Uh-huh.
Build up the same thing with alcohol. You know, if you drink a fifth of alcohol every day, it'd be very hard to kill yourself with alcohol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can drive a car with a 4.5 percent or degree of alcohol level in the bloodstream,
mm-hmm.
blood alcohol level of in the fours. Well, typically that's alcohol poisoning and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they do it all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty straightforward. Now, I'm remembering that in Total Biology they talked about hay fever as being a kind of a disconnection where if you've had some sort of trauma around the time when you're exposed, like the story was being caught in the hay barn, you know, kissing your girlfriend and being embarrassed by that, and ever after you have hay fever.
Well, that should actually be just the opposite of that, shouldn't it? If you're rolling around, taking a roll in the hay,
mm-hmm.
you're building up quite a tolerance to that, and from that activation, the most it would do is make you amorous of the memory of having an ejaculation more than it would set off a span of hay fever.
Mm-hmm.
It would be exactly opposite to that.
Yeah.
It's someone that you have nurtured and never let out of the house, and then you decide you're going to take them on a hay ride with a fresh cut hay coming in,
uh-huh.
that they've never ever one time been exposed, and then all of a sudden you throw them in the middle of it, and they can even go into an asthmatic condition and have to go to the hospital and have some treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, the disconnection from that side can't be from that issue or aspect, because if you're raised up on a farm, it'll break you out, the stickly parts of the cut hay, because they're sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an irritant, but after a little while, you build up a tolerance to that, and you don't have any regard to it.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
You know, that'd be like saying, oh, manure has disease and will kill you. Not to somebody who has to muck the stalls every day.
Mm-hmm.
Then it just becomes protein that you have to haul out of the barn so it's not so stinky.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Right, so I mean, it can be very individual. I can see where someone can develop a negative association with a food or substance.
Well, then that's setting up a whole different manifestation, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Because many people have it and don't even know what an elm tree is.
Mm-hmm.
Many people have never been to a farm to even see how hay is propagated.
Right, right, right.
And then they call it hay fever. It's nothing other than those excess pollens that they draw to themselves that are an irritant.
Mm-hmm.
At whatever degree or level. Some it's grass, some it's oak, some it's pine, some it's all these different things that they just draw a sensitivity regarding. But
mm-hmm.
that sensitivity can't be a negative retribution. That's almost like karma.
Mm, good point. Mm-hmm.
But now, if you come into that place and you have this really horrible problem, this real guilt about that process, guess what? Every time you kiss a woman, well, we're saying a woman just because that's what you were talking about, but or having relationship or intercourse, then you should break out in the same hay fever symptoms, if that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
If it's trigger, and the triggers, and that's why you have the disconnections, because you weren't supposed to be fooling around in the barn, then any time you had that anywhere, then that would be your same reality.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're getting it from you, so we're just kind of...
Yeah,
love your total biology. It's such a great contract.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's very interesting. And it's almost like, you know, when you talk to a person or when I talk to a client, sometimes you're just talking and you throw in a possibility, and if it lands somewhere that is helpful to them, then they'll grab on it. It almost doesn't matter what you say. You just have to be saying something.
Because how does that work? The resonance of that is pleasant to their understanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too large a jump.
Mm-hmm.
If the client was talking to you and they were complaining about how horrible their life was and it was awful, they have the hay fever and they can't do it, and they've been to every doctor, they've had their sinuses drained, they've had their deviated septum corrected, they've had the nodules that have grown in their septum removed, they've had the brain surgery that removes all this stuff, and they've gone on and on and on and on and on, and they just is no relief. There is no possibility. And you go, okay, here's the secret. Here's how to get rid of hay fever forever. You take a tin blade and you open up the carotid artery in your neck. And we promise you, you will never, ever, ever suffer from hay fever or hay fever symptoms ever in your whole life. If that's what they have to have as the answer, that's not one that they'll attach to.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So it's that same genre of experience. You know, you'd hope for so much more, so you might as well. It's over for you. There is no hope for you, so you might as well end it now.
So what you're saying is I'm just giving them a much milder, lesser possibility of an answer.
And if anything that gives them the resonance of coming back to reattaching to the non-physical part of them that is, it becomes a logical path of joy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be the best joy that's ever been ever in the whole wide world, but sometimes they get very miserable with it, and they're tired of their Claritin and their Claritin D and the things that they take to go to sleep, you know, and all these antihistamines. Antihistamine. Interesting. Histamine. So why can't do they have a histamine that makes your nose run?
Apparently so.
Okay, well, why don't they give them more of that, and then when they get in the hay, it'll be so normal that it'll actually correct itself, and it'll be the natural antihistamine.
Yes, yeah, good point. There are doctors who have figured that out, and they're trying to give it, and then they actually get attacked by their discipline board for doing the wrong thing, even though it works.
Even though it works. He's doing the wrong thing, even though it works. There
mm-hmm.
you go. There you go. Perfect words. Perfect words.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your book is to open up a whole different capacity of possibilities that they can master or not. But
mm-hmm.
you're still leaving it in the hands of the reader to engage or not.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And once they start having practical, functioning, fruitionable success regarding it, it's like Granny's remedies.
Mm-hmm.
Granny's remedies are so functionally right because you trust Granny, and it always worked for Granny, so it always works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then that works better than the other. We'll give you a personal one from JW's experience.
Yeah.
Here's how you go. You have a cold. You have anything, coughing, dripping, running, any aspect of what you call nasal, sinus-related, anything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the rule of thumb was you'd had a spoonful of sugar with corn liquor filled over top of the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And any time you blew your nose or you coughed, you got a spoonful.
Uh-huh.
And it was the nastiest tasting thing in the whole wide world because, see, they would do the home squeezings, which would run about 170, 180 proof.
Whoa.
Which is pure alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what that does? It knocks the top of your head off, and it opens those up immediately, and then you are ceased to have those issues any longer. Mm-hmm. And, but that's not why it worked. But why it worked is that any time that that happened and Granny caught you with the sniffles, or if you ever wiped snot on your shirt collar, it was over. Mm-hmm. And come in and have a cough. Oh, no, we'll nip it in the bud.
Mm-hmm.
Nip this in the bud. And that was such a vile, nasty, horrible-tasting thing that you literally did whatever you had to do not to cough. Well, you did whatever you had to do not to cough, then you no longer suffered from the dry throat, scratchy throat, irritated throat, coughing throat, dripping into the back of your throat. It corrected itself because of the ramifications of having to take her remedy, which you wanted to, it was much worse than having the cough.
Yeah.
And it worked every single time without fail or exception.
Mm-hmm.
See, you could buy the store-bought stuff, but it was great because that was cherry flavored.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd get the disconnection because you liked the taste of it.
Yep. Interesting,
you see. Oh, go on, keep on going, get constipated up, and then all of a sudden, after a little while, it was a dose of castor oil.
Uh-huh.
Have a dose of that, too, and it'll work you.
Uh-huh.
Like a dose of salts.
Mm-hmm.
So you quit grumbling with a bellyache because you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But when you quit grumbling with it, guess what? You don't have it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because their reality was get after it, handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go, it'll canker.
Mm-hmm. It'll fester.
It'll fester. Mustard plasters.
Mm.
The same thing. Camphor oil. Camphor was great. Mentholatum or camphor. Real camphor spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Camphor gum. It'd do it.
Mm-hmm. Funny.
Well, it is funny, but you got to realize it worked.
Well, and it worked for the, well, not so much relax and allow, it worked for the reason of the contrast of the treatment was worse than the disease, so let's just drop the disease and be done with it.
Well, then why can't you do that with your chemotherapy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same premise.
Yeah. I think some people probably heal because they think it's as powerful as a shotgun in the head. So.
Well, it is, honey. It's actually worse. Get a drop of the chemotherapy, the mustard solution, on the outside of your skin and leave a hole in it.
Right.
Try it.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you.
Well, I mean, but hey, imagine that.
Yeah.
But Granny's old-timey, that doesn't work. But oncologists are proven by it because their solution is effective at killing those cancers, recreating cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's what it takes to jolt you into relaxing, allowing to embrace your life again, okay, then yes, that'll work. But so would chicken bones and a witch doctor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If that be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Or make you eat cancerous meat. Now, gosh, Lord have mercy, this is coming from you, so just...
No, it's not. I don't know anything about cancerous meat.
Bear with us.
Yeah.
Make them eat cancer-tainted meat cells,
mm-hmm.
and it would cause a contrast, and your body would naturally fight against it, and you might throw it up, but it'd also get rid of your reproducing cells the same way.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Expose it. Mm-hmm. Remember? Mm-hmm. Expose it. It is.
Well, that's what we say, we think, why we think homeopathy is working, because you can give someone, a tiny infinitesimal bit of a bad thing, and it reminds their body to get rid of other bad things.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it also can build a tolerance, like cleaning your teeth with arsenic, so that they can't poison you with arsenic.
Uh-huh.
Same premise.
Mm-hmm.
And on that belief system of taking a little of poison... makes you immune. Oh, wait, that's how your vaccinations work.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't so tiny.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go. So this isn't witch doctory. It's from your science.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense when we say it, though, but they get money for it. Imagine that.
Yeah.
The CDC gets to be put in charge of it.
Yeah.
The Center for Disease Control. What a wonderful... place that must be.
The Center for Disease Creation.
What a wonderful place that must be.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. A whole place that's in charge of that.
Mm-hmm.
Of every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the disconnected ones are judged.
Mm-hmm.
quarantined. Mm-hmm. Well, well, that's enough of that. Sorry. We digress.
Yeah, very true. I'll have to put that in my Death by Modern Medicine book. Okay. Okay, we're on to headaches.
Okay. Now, we've already done this tremendously. Okay? So we're going to have to do the simple version for this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We've already done the pressure part, migraines, epilepsy, all that whole process of this raging torrent of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're talking about a headache, like a sinus headache, a frontal headache, a sick headache.
Muscular. I'd say this is a tension headache here.
Same thing. You don't get that in your head. You get that in your neck, which shows up in pressure in your head.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
My head is killing me. My head is splitting. I feel like my head is going to pop.
Uh-huh.
It all comes back. So you take an aspirin, and that old-timey birchwood increases or thins the blood,
mm-hmm.
reducing your platelet count a bit,
mm-hmm.
and allows it to flow. And you can sometimes rub your temples. You can sometimes do it with a reflexology. We'll do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then that pressure is relieved because you've opened up a larger vessel that may not be flowing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can't do that with a gout sufferer because he'll kick your head off.
Mm-hmm.
You start massaging a gout aching joint.
Right. Right.
Because of that crystallization. So we're coming back to that same place. Anything warm compresses, what does that do? It opens up the blood vessels and sometimes relieves the headache.
Mm-hmm.
Lie down sometimes lets it to become more equal. Your center of gravity has changed.
Mm-hmm.
The pumping is not as voracious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A cool compress sometimes is appropriate to the back of the head if it is indeed like you've pulled a neck muscle and it's in your spine and causing pressure. It's causing a headache. Okay, fine. Same thing with a sick headache. We went through several different kinds, but they're all muscle-related as far as the pressure. Because you don't feel a headache in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You have no nerve endings to pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
You have no nerve endings to pick that up.
I know. You told me that before.
Well, try it. How they drill through your skull.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
With very little anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
They want you awake, and it doesn't bother you. Oh, they give you 10 of Ativan just to make you happy, but they don't give you a 5 of morphine to start that process, do they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Same process.
Has JW's company come?
No.
I heard the door.
It's his children running about. Well, he just has one here, so.
His child.
They're running about. He sounds like Minnie.
The disconnection with headaches, can you take me there?
Pressure.
Okay.
Pressure.
So it's too much pressure in one's environment?
Bound, lessening of circulation that binds
mm-hmm.
or gets bound. Not released.
Not released.
But if it was released, there wouldn't be pressure and you wouldn't have a headache.
Right, right, right.
Sometimes when people don't eat, they get a headache.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's because of the way the adrenal punches with the adrenal glands are mm-hmm. reacting to the stomach acid
mm-hmm.
that sends into a place of pressure.
I don't know about that. Tell me more about that.
That was just one that you were fixing to ask about because you were like, that's not critical, but people have that more often than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
When they get hungry,
mm-hmm.
okay, and their sugar drops.
Yeah.
The adrenaline will kick in.
Yeah.
And when the adrenaline kicks in, now, other substances will also do this as well as far as soothing it. Nicotine will do that.
No, don't get me off topic. I want to finish the sentence about...
There are other things that you can use to correct that so you don't get a headache from not eating.
But okay, I need to stick with this because I haven't eaten lately, so my blood sugar's low, so I have to focus.
Okay.
So the sugar drops, and which we know then adrenaline kicks in. And then you said, and when that happens,
what? It causes pressure or increased stomach acid because you're ready for food. And that circulation then causes pressure in the head, which can cause you to have those temple headaches.
Now, where does the increased stomach acid come from in this?
From your hunger. You're ready to digest food.
Okay.
That's when you smell something wonderful and you start salivating.
All right.
Same thing.
So, okay.
You're getting ready for food, so you have more spit.
Sugar drops, stomach acid increases.
Pressure increases because the blood flow is ready to go to the stomach.
But the pressure would decrease elsewhere if the circulation is going to the stomach.
Except for the adrenaline kicking in because you're irritable because you're not eating. And the adrenaline makes you kind of more spastic regarding it, which causes it, stops it from being released out of the brain. Coffee is an upper. Okay. Coffee is an upper.
Right.
And that becomes a balance. It also soothes that acid. It creates it, but it soothes it because it's more acid on acid. So then you don't have to have that headache from not eating a breakfast if you enjoy nice coffee, and many people do that. But if they got up and had a glass of water and nothing else, in a few hours, especially if they hadn't eaten supper, you know, if they ate late, then never mind, but you know, if they're dropping from the breaking of the fast, and that's not normal, then it becomes a, what you call a sick headache or a hunger headache.
Right. What I'm thinking is the sugar drops, the adrenaline kicks in, it pounds up your blood circulation, the blood pounds into your head, and if you have some sort of disconnection that can't release the pressure, then you feel the headache. But I don't know where the stomach acid comes into it.
Shall we tell you?
Please.
Okay, here's the example of the other side of it. In the wintertime, you're nice and toasty warm, okay? You eat lunch, okay? And then after lunch, then you're cold.
Yeah.
Well, how is that? It's because all the blood then goes to the stomach because of that increased acid. It goes to the stomach and starts digestion. So your blood flow, your circulation pressure, the same thing that would cause the headache, is now at the stomach working.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore your other extremities feel cold.
Right, right.
That's the other side of it, of after you've eaten. But before you've eaten, you've increased the pressure because you're ready to digest. If there's nothing to digest, it's just more acid. And the blood's not working, so it causes pressure. So then you have a headache. It's when the adrenaline kicks in and won't let that release. It's the way you have stamina when you're running.
No, I still don't get why you have head pressure when your stomach acid is up.
Okay. Well, no, not necessarily. The stomach acid doesn't have as much to do with it as the stomach acid if when you're hungry. When you're hungry, you're developing the digestive fluid in the stomach, which is what's giving you the hunger pains that you know you're hungry.
Right.
You see, because of that process. But that's just from the hunger headache. But you can do the same thing when you're running and not eating. The same thing almost identically occurs. Sometimes you can get your heart rate up to such a degree that you can feel the pounding in your temples.
Right.
And if the adrenals are kicked in and then you come into a real cold position very quickly, then what happens is sometimes that flow is stopped and you'll get a pounding in your head like a headache.
Right.
But we use the stomach acid because of the increased stomach production, the salivation of hungry, of knowing that you're hungry and that feeling that your blood sugar is dropping and that you need a little something, but you have a sip of juice or you have a sip of something else that gives that something to work on until you can have real food.
Uh-huh.
Then your blood works on that. Then the adrenals calm down. Then the flow of pressure out of the head is released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still don't see the whole process you're telling me about, but the pressure seems to me mainly to be related to the adrenals just pounding.
Yes, and in a hunger headache, that's what kicks that in. Otherwise, you'd just finally pass out. You mm-hmm. wouldn't be able to make it to the food.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Okay, that's good.
The adrenaline has to kick in to get you down to the kitchen to get something to eat.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd get to the refrigerator, open the door, and pass out because you'd go into the shock of no sugar.
Yeah, I know. The adrenal glands are really quite amazing.
Magnesium is a wonderful temperer of that as well, since you're all about the magnesium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely necessary.
So AAM becomes a real good prescription.
What's AAM?
All about magnesium.
Oh.
Need a dose of AAM.
So, as an aside on the magnesium, can you tell me how many people are reading my magnesium book and getting helped by it?
Well, that's two questions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We don't know how to answer that question, you see, because let's turn this around.
Uh-huh.
How many did you intend on reaching when you authored that work?
As many as possible.
That's how many are reading it.
Uh-huh.
But because otherwise we could give you a finite number.
Yeah, I know.
But then they turn right around, and in this one you get them all on the right, straight, and narrow, then somebody else comes up with some funked out craziness of sniffing pine tops and drinking only grain alcohol, and that solves everything, and then they're on to that.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the ion diet.
Well, you know, it goes on and on and on and on, and if that's the pleasure, great, but they're looking. And if they find it, they don't know they found it.
Oh, I know.
Until it becomes real into their reality and or not undone by the next layer or degree of contrast.
Right.
Because these people could start dying from magnesium, and then you get sued because you did the Herbalife diet of magnesium and they got too much because they embraced it too much, and it might as well be Celebrex.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even though they were able to dance like a kid again.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So the intention of the work is pure. The progress of the work is pure.
Mm-hmm.
The activation part is with the individual.
Uh-huh.
So if they could read your ion work or your Kingdom Come book first and then read your magnesium work, then it might be more easy for them to grasp the pearl that mm-hmm. would not be necessarily cast for the swine.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing an advertisement there. We're just saying that process of the intention, you see.
Yeah,
where ours is not focused. Ours is never ever touch magnesium the rest of your life and see how that works out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Find out anything that has magnesium in it and eliminate it from your world and see what happens. And that contrast will get you right to the place right quick where you'll start believing in it because of the way your elimination.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Good.
Okay, I just burped, so we're doing heartburn.
Okay. Heartburn all the way into reflux?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. You have the little esophageal clicker. The disconnection between the stomach, okay, the upper stomach, and the esophagus or the esophageal tract.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you got to remember when you're swallowing, you have divisions.
Mm-hmm.
Some goes in your lungs, some goes to your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And never the tween shall twix.
Right.
Otherwise, you're choking to death.
Right.
And if you do, you got to cough it up. But when you cough it up, that's where it's got to cough up to, is so it can flow through from the tongue as it divides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
And so now, when you have excess increased acid, okay, sometimes there's two things that happen. One is that gas is you're eating a certain kind of food or a fast or a lot of food, or rich or spicy or whatever you want to call it, to where your stomach has to produce extra acid. And done over time, that can just be an instance to where you have heartburn where some slips back through the esophageal sphincter into that line between the stomach and the bottom of your throat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you call, that acidity is what you call heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what's in that process. Now, in time, that'll work itself out. But over time, over a long span,
mm-hmm.
you can erode the muscle of, call that esophageal sphincter,
mm-hmm.
in which you get it all the time.
Right, right.
Where you can eat burnt dry toast and get heartburn.
Right.
Or sometimes a banana. See, that increase of potassium sometimes will do it. Heartburn will give you heartburn. Sometimes melon will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can taste them. Mm-hmm. You eat a cantaloupe that's really, really sweet. And mm-hmm. that fermentation process, and then 3 hours later you can taste cantaloupe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's an example of that transitional process. Doesn't have to be uncomfortable, but it certainly can be.
Right.
Okay. That's the heartburn, and that's when they start the little purple peel, or what you call Prilosec, or OTC, Prilosec OTC,
mm-hmm.
to heal or allow less constriction so that sphincter can repair naturally its complete closure of that leaking back or backwash into the esophageal tract.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much the whole medical line or propaganda about all that, which I don't believe in at all, because most of what happens in the stomach is a lack of proper hydrochloric acid and a backwash of more alkaline. And the Prilosec just kills...
Yes.
Any remaining acid, and
yes.
doesn't do any healing.
Correct. That's why we said that's when they start calling for the little purple pill.
Right.
The little products that go over-the-counter stuff. So, but the solution, if you want a solution, which is
sure.
kind of way fun, because this is not some detriment. Now, you can think you're dying, okay, from a good case of heartburn. Or if you go and you say, you tell them to go to the hospital, just dying of a heartburn. And they say, what'd you eat? And you say, oh, I didn't eat anything. And then they say, well, what did you eat last? And I said, well, I had a pan of mama's lasagna. And then I had some Thai left over. And I had some kimchi. And I had some, a raspberry milkshake. You know, and you start mixing all these crazy things. And you're kind of like going, well, the heartburn won't kill you. Your diet will, because, you know, it's that insane imbalance of a quantity sometimes that you're eating. Or
mm-hmm.
sometimes you'll eat a big meal and then go right to bed. Eat mm-hmm. late because you're starving and then go right to bed. Well, then all that's laying down, so you're going to have some discomfort there many times, more times than not. Here's the simple, easy solution, which goes back to what you were saying, as far as the degree of alkalinity.
Mm-hmm.
Get a good, kosher, dill pickle.
Mm-hmm.
It can be garlic, it can be hot, it can be just... But the good, kosher, dill pickle.
Right.
Preferably cold.
Mm-hmm.
And good and sour. None of this sweet pickle business.
All right.
Dill, art, vinegary,
mm-hmm.
dill pickle. And then a... Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
The phosphorus in the Coca-Cola and the CO2 sort of adds that bubblicious part of the phosphorus, which can increase the alkalinity. And then the vinegar becomes a soothing process that allows the pH to basically correct itself. And it'll work every single time without fail or exception.
Hmm. Well, I tend not to believe that, because if you put Coke in with a rusty nail, it'll take the rust right off the nail. It's not really going to be that helpful for the stomach.
But the phosphorus in your stomach will help create the alkalinity that will suspend the heartburn. It'll clear it. And you could do it with ginger ale. I'm sure that'd be just as well, and that's not quite as nasty. Or you could probably even do it with a bubbly water.
Mm-hmm.
Coca-Cola just always works, just because it seems palatable with a sharp dill pickle.
Mm-hmm.
That combination, and if you don't like that, then have heartburn. It's okay with us.
No, you don't have to be like you don't have to be like that. We're just having a discussion. Non-physical doesn't have to take it personally.
Well, no, I mean that is one thing that works every single time. Now,
well, it may work for people who think it's going to work, and it's all the attitude. So I'd rather find something that's a little less obnoxious and
very good
without
that's
the 10 teaspoons of sugar in the can.
Sure. And it really makes no difference. Are you really want to take them right on out? Go with a Diet Coke, which is the aspartame, which is even more caustic in your world.
Right.
You know, it'll evaporate the nail, you know,
right.
Or give the nail cancer to a point where it'll cause other nails to catch cancer from its cancer. So, but the whole process of that whole thing. Use a ginger ale. Use a bubbly water. Maybe even beer might do it. Just something bubbly, okay, that can cause your body the reason to increase its alkalinity, which is you're exactly correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whatever that is, but that's just one that is effective. So
well, that could be
adjust it.
Where the apple cider vinegar and honey could come into this as well.
Very possibly, yes. But sometimes, if you have that heartburn, you will want to 86 or DC the honey,
mm-hmm.
because the honey is going it won't help with the alkalinity. You see,
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
honey is actually going to go the other way. It'll sour. It helps a sour stomach, but it won't help the heartburn, the raging heartburn.
Right.
So that's one where you could do maybe just the vinegar, and then maybe I tell you what might be appropriate if you can stand it. We don't know the combination, but like a soda cracker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a soda cracker might bring you that same place.
Mm-hmm.
Of a dill pickle and soda cracker to sort of get it through. And the vinegar is great, but the dill pickle seed actually adds something you have to digest.
Mm.
So it stays in your system long enough for the alkaline to get charged into being created.
Right.
But that's why that's just, well, as we know it.
Yeah. Okay. yeah, well, as you know it from JW, and, you know, I have to beat some of that out of you sometimes just to get back to other possibilities.
It is what it is. That's just one. I'm sure there are probably others. We just don't know them.
Right.
So if that's the case, then it becomes, well, but it's the broad, generalized version of what you're asking, you see.
Uh-huh.
Because it becomes, you can't talk about the lack of ease or the disconnection and the whole process without giving some laudable conclusion that is effective in non-physical and physical. All right, and if you try that and you have a disconnection regarding it, it's not going to work anyway,
mm-hmm.
and neither is the Prilosec, and then the next thing you know, then you got throat cancer because the acid is eaten away. Or you're binging or purging until all of the enamels, the knackers off your teeth, and they're all falling out, so you can't eat anything but oatmeal anyway. So then you shouldn't have heartburn. You solved it yourself.
And the disconnection with heartburn?
Guilt or breaking of your rules,
uh-huh.
of imbibing in excess or outside of your belief system that you accept as laudable.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you can avoid all that, then you don't have to be bothered with it the first time.
So you're eating foods that you think are bad for you, and you're disconnected from them, and then they become bad for you.
And especially in excess.
Oh, yes.
Because what is wrong with lasagna? There's nothing wrong with lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
Lasagna is okay, but eat a pan of it.
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens.
Okay, Doug.
We almost got into another little tirade of beating that to death, and we're like, okay, we're good.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, buddy, well, I have an appointment at my office on the beach.
Marvelous.
Yes.
Eat something before you go because you're hungry.
Yes, absolutely. All that talk about food. Yes, I will. And then
what's our next topic?
Heart disease.
Oh, wonderful. All the infarctions. What a delicious, wonderful thing that'll be. Very good. And then we'll play tonight. And this is with Steve in Beijing.
No. This is Steve up in Toronto. He transcribed the Rayon thing for us.
Yes. I thought he was in China.
No, that's Buzz Poston. He does the YouTubes. Two different guys. Bob's got a whole stable of people.
Oh, okay. So this is Steve in Toronto.
Yeah. Right.
And he's had a reading already, right?
Correct.
And it worked or he liked it? Or?
Oh, yeah, it was very good for him. We gave that one to him as a gift, too, because he's been helping Bob so much.
Helping with everything. That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
Very, very wonderful. So then that'll be at 9:15 or so?
Yes.
Very, very wonderful. Then we'll play then, and we are complete.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian.